Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
We've got Kate Mulhare. She is the lead editor of Best Colleges and the education reporter at Money Magazine. Everybody is starting to wonder how much college is actually worth during the time of the pandemic. Caitlin, welcome to 720 WGN.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's delightful. So tell us a little bit about, everybody has, I'm sure, seen that college students and their parents have been suing colleges to get back some of their tuition now that they can't actually be on campus. Does that change the calculus for people who are applying now to college? Or should they be thinking about it? What are you guys thinking?
Yeah, it's a really great question that I'm not sure that many people have a good answer to at this point. I mean, one of the challenges is that we don't really know when campus life will resume normalcy, right? So if you're a current college student and you can't be on campus and get all the values of being with your, being in classes with other students, talking with professors, studying on the quad, using the libraries and labs, it's really obvious, right, that there's something missing from that. But for, you know, high schoolers who are going to be applying this year, it's likely that we'll, you know, look that they'll see a more normal experience next fall, but we don't know that for sure.
So when you rank your best colleges for the money, a subject near and dear to my heart, how are you actually doing that? Are you looking at just the amount of money they're going to make on the other side of it?
No, so we look at a lot of different stuff. One of them, basically our goal is to look at the value you're getting out of college. So that looks like a variety of things, right? We look at the graduation rate. We look at how much you're paying on the front end. So how much a degree costs, how much debt you're taking out, both for the student and the parent, how well you're able to repay that debt. And then, like you mentioned, we also look at salaries on the flip side, right? So if you're paying, you know, a ton of money and not earning a lot afterwards, that's a problem. If you're paying a lot of money, but then you're actually getting a job that is allowing you to repay your debt if you had to borrow, then that is, you know, what we would say is a degree that's paying off.
All right. So the top school that you have in Best Colleges in America for Your Money, the top 10 are MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, Stanford, Princeton, University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. So I can understand why that's a good value. Duke, University of Virginia, Yale, Vanderbilt is number 8, University of California, San Diego, a lovely place, especially in the winter, and University of California, Davis, which of all of them, the last two are sort of the most interesting to me. And you know, maybe just talk a little bit about how these, I mean, clear MIT, Stanford, Princeton, I get why they're at the top. Why do you have U of C, San Diego, and UC Davis on this list?
Yeah, so like you said, the top three are super familiar names, right? But the UC campuses actually do wonderfully in our rankings every year. This is actually probably the lowest that one of the UCs has ranked in the past couple years. So they are just an excellent bargain, frankly. The entire University of California system, and this is true for the California State Universities as well, are comparatively really affordable. So that's not to say that they are necessarily cheap, right? But they are much more affordable than a lot of other state universities. And I should be clear, I'm talking for in-state students only. If you're coming from out of state, you have to pay higher prices, right? But for in-state students, that changes the calculation quite a bit. But for in-state students, the tuition is relatively affordable. They offer a lot of financial aid. They enroll students from a lot of different backgrounds, different socioeconomic backgrounds, I should say, which is something else we look at in our rankings. And then their graduation rates are really quite high, especially for public colleges. Most of them, I think, have graduation rates in the 80 percentile, most of the UCs, which might not sound high, but at a public college, that's like the top among the top in the nation. And then on the flip side, graduates also do well. They get high paying jobs and they're able to repay their debt at high rates.
I have to say, I really love the colleges on your list, but they are super hard to get into. I wish you would do a list on best colleges in America for your money that you actually could get into if you applied.
Well, I'm so glad you brought that up because we actually have a sublist that focuses specifically on that. It's on our main college ranking page. So if you go to money.com/colleges, there's going to be a little button at the top that says popular rankings. And within it, there's a sublist. There are a variety of sublists, but one of them is about the colleges that actually admit the majority of students. So at least 50% of students who apply are admitted to those colleges. And in some cases, much higher, you know, as many as 2/3 of students are admitted.
All right. So we were talking, and it was breaking up just a bit, about, you know, what are the best colleges that you can actually get into? So what are some of those? Because honestly, I think Yale, MIT, Stanford, and Princeton have something under a 4% acceptance rate at this point.
Yes, they do. And the story that I wrote with these rankings, I basically say these colleges are practically impossible to get into, right? But so I'm glad we're talking about this again, because this is my favorite part of our rankings, is these best colleges where most students actually do get in. So those are places like Texas A&M University, University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, Purdue University. So a lot of state schools, but certainly not all of them are public schools. There are a lot of there are private schools as well. And I guess what I would say is that, you know, we have over 700 colleges on our list. And so while it can be really exciting to look at the top five or the top 10, that somewhere on that list, there is likely a college that is going to be a college that's a good academic fit and financial fit for an individual student, right? And it may not be number five, it might be number 55 or number 75, and that's okay as well.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about sort of how the pandemic is changing things. I have two nieces who are seniors. They're applying. We have lots of friends whose kids are seniors in high school this year that are applying. And their parents are up in arms. Everybody is completely freaked out that their kids haven't been able to visit campuses. There are no tours. The things that are kind of become a rite of passage, where you go through these tours and you sit through them and you find out about information, you talk to kids, you go to attend classes. You can't do any of that right now. And we now have the California schools. I think this was yesterday. A judge said, listen, you absolutely can't look at anybody's ACT or SAT because they may not have, you know, you can't have some people do and some people don't, and then somehow it's fair. It's not going to be fair. So that's been eliminated for California. But around the rest of the country, again, some people haven't been able to take their ACT and SAT. Some people have, but they didn't do well and they wanted to. How is all of this going to end up for everybody? I feel so bad for these kids who are applying to college now.
Yeah, I do too. They've got a really the short end of the stick, to say the least. But I would say, I think from the college's perspective, what I've heard from admissions officers and also what the organizations that represent admissions officers are telling them is that they should be very flexible and empathetic. And I think in most cases you will see that, right? Colleges understand that students are not able to take the SAT and ACT. You know, I'm in some of these parent groups, and they're talking about having signed up like 4 or 5 times in March to try and help have their student take a test, and it's canceled every single time, sometimes at the last minute. In other cases, there's actually been students who got sick after taking the test. So certainly colleges don't want to encourage students to drive, to a different state and risk their health in order to take the SAT or the ACT. And so that's why we're seeing most, if not all, colleges are saying that they'll be test optional this year, which means that students do not have to send in, a standardized test score. My recommendation would be for, if you know what campuses you're interested in, to go ahead and give them a call and ask what exactly that means. If you don't send in a score, will it hurt you? Will it hurt your chances for any sort of scholarships? Things like that, because it's really going to be individualized. Not every campus is going to be handling this the same way.
Yeah, I think my nieces are in New York, and what their schools are telling them are, look, all these colleges are saying it's test optional, but if you don't do it, it's going to hurt you, because then there are kids who are figuring it out. And in some cases, these kids are driving across state lines in order to take ACT tests simply because they can't figure out a place to do it in, near where they live, because they haven't, to your point, yeah, it hasn't been opened up yet. And I think that's been a problem in, more of the major cities than we're hearing about. I know it's been a problem in New York City, but it's a problem elsewhere as well.
Yeah, it's certainly crazy. And I mean, I know, I think that there's a lot of anxiety among parents and students because they're just not sure what this test optional means and how honest, you know, colleges frankly are being when they say test optional. Does that really mean that I still have to submit a score in order to be considered? And so that's why I really think you just have to talk to the admissions counselors, tell them, you know, what you expect your score to be and ask them, you know, straight up, what are the chances of me getting accepted if I don't submit a score versus due? Because, you know, it's hard to guarantee that every college will be truly test optional and not give benefits to higher scorers. Mm-hmm. But I think that some will be, right? A lot of places have been test optional for years, right? And actually don't believe in, you know, the usefulness of the standardized testing system. So it's going to depend a lot.
So one of the things that I really appreciated is that you looked this year at Black Lives Matter on campus, how to pick a college that values diversity. And, you know, figuring that out is really important. You know, I've got friends whose kids think they want a Southern school. They're looking at some of those schools that are on your list. But they, you know, are worried that they won't find the kind of diverse campus or appreciation of diversity that they're really looking for. So how should kids think about that? How should parents guide their children?
Yeah, so the first thing they should do is just look at some statistics. That's what some experts recommended to us, right? So you want to look at the enrollment on campus and also the breakdown of faculty, because, you know, if you're a student of color, you want to be seeing people on campus who look like you, both in the classroom and also leading the classes, right? So those are two important things. You also want to look at the graduation rates broken down by race. We see, you know, Black and Hispanic students tend to have lower national graduation rates than their white peers. So you want to look for a school that has the lowest possible gap, if there is a gap, or if there is a gap, at least a school that's acknowledging that and talking about the ways in which they're going to address that. The same goes for student debt, right, because that's another area where we see Black students tend to have to borrow more student debt, and they struggle more to pay it off after they graduate. So those are other areas where you want to be really straight, like ask the college for that data, and most of them should give it to you. And if they don't give it to you, I would say that in and of itself is maybe a red flag. Beyond those like hard numbers, a lot of this is going to be more qualitative, right? So you want to talk to as many students on campus as you can. Read the student newspaper, see how administrators and students are talking about campus events. If there have been recent racist incidents on campus, how did administrators address it? Do students feel like it was addressed fairly? And another thing that one of the professors recommended to our reporter was that you should also ask about the curriculum, right? So are there going to be places where you're learning about, let's say, African-American culture on campus? Is that only going to be in classes that are offered in the African-American department? Or will you learn about that in your English classes and your sociology classes and your music classes as well? So it's kind of an all-encompassing thing. I would say I would recommend starting with the numbers and then talking to professors, administrators, and students and asking a lot of questions about the racial climate on campus.
How is it you're actually supposed to talk to all these people, though, since they're not on campus as well? In a lot of cases, you've got no students on campus. You can't go visit the campus, so you're not going to run into them. My kids asked these when they were on their campus tours. It strikes me that there's a real problem here with actually getting access to the people who might actually be able to answer those questions for you.
Yes, yeah, and this is another way in which, you know, seniors this year have a harder task ahead of them. But I would say you can, in terms of like one example would be reading the campus newspaper and reaching out to the writers on staff. Most of them, oftentimes their email addresses will be published. And it can feel a little awkward, right? I mean, anytime you get in touch with somebody you don't know and you're asking them for advice. But I think, and this is what students have told us too, is that most students are going to be eager to talk about this and to tell you what they know and what they have learned from being on campus. So that's one way. I know I've seen other campuses that are doing like virtual, not just virtual tours, but virtual information sessions that are hosted a lot of times by a panel of students or that feature student. So certainly you could ask that during the session, but I wouldn't be afraid to, if there's any way you can contact a student ambassador to get their contact information and follow up afterwards. Because some of these conversations are certainly better one-on-one than they are in like a virtual information session, as an example.
I love your suggestion of calling the reporter, the student reporters, because of course they're going to give you, I think, a more honest picture than maybe somebody who is one of the campus ambassadors, right? They're a booster for the campus, essentially, is their job, as opposed to the student reporters who are just talking about things that they're seeing going on. It's great to have both perspectives.
Yes.
Coronavirus has really changed a lot of families' financial capabilities. And the FAFSA forms will be available, I think, right after January 1st for next year. Any tips there on, I know that kids are complaining about paying the same amount, and now they're living at home, or they are living in apartments, which can be even more expensive than on-campus housing. And in some cases, the universities are giving them a break. Sometimes they're not. What are you seeing going on there, and what should parents plan for next year?
Yeah, so if you're a current college student and your finances have changed, you lost your job, or a parent has lost their job, or lost some wages, you want to get in touch with your financial aid office and ask them if there's essentially more money available for you. In most cases, you're going to have to fill out some paperwork and to demonstrate the ways in which your finances have changed. And maybe I should say it's not only just that like you lost your job. It could also be that you have more expenses now, right? If you have increased healthcare expenses, or your parents are having to pay additional money to watch younger kids at home, whatever it may be. So I would say reach out to your financial aid office as soon as possible and ask them whether there's more. In some cases, you may qualify for more federal financial aid. A lot of colleges are having fundraising drives right now to increase their own financial aid as well. And colleges also often have been working on these funds. They're often called emergency funds, right? And so they're emergency grants for short-term unexpected expenses. So especially if you just have like a one-time blip that you need help getting over, a lot of colleges have set up dedicated funds to help students through that.
So
that's for current students. And then for next year, it's actually going to be really frustrating because, like you said, the FAFSA actually now comes out on October 1st. It used to be January 1st, but they changed
it's early.
The timeline. Yeah, but one of the challenges is that you still have to use older tax data. So the data that you're going to use, the financial data that you're going to put onto the form, is going to be 2 years old. So if anything has changed in your life since March, which is the case for millions and millions of families, it's not going to be captured on your FAFSA form, and there's really nothing you can do about that yet. You basically have to just fill out the form as it says, and then when you get your financial aid package, that's when you go through this process where you file an appeal and say, hey, actually, the information that's on my financial aid form is not, representative of my actual finances right now. Something has changed, and here's evidence of that, and that the financial aid office has the power to basically change your form.
Which is great. Caitlin Mulhare is lead editor of the Best Colleges section on Money Magazine and an education reporter there as well. You can find out more at Money Magazine, money.com, and it's /best colleges, right, Caitlin?
Yes, that's right.
All right, terrific. Thanks so much for being with us today on 720 WGN.
Thanks for having me. I enjoyed chatting with you.